start of a new series. We'll see if it continues. Called the Rays of Light. It's the teachings of Rabbi Reuven Sassoon. Now, you probably never heard of Rabbi Reuven Sassoon. I would say most people who live in America have never heard of who is Reuven Sassoon. And the truth is, even in Israel, where he lives, he is just becoming famous now because, I would say the last 10 years, he's been coming out with Sfarim, a lot of Sfarim every single year, and he's been anonymous until recently, where it's become known that really he is the author of all these Sfarim that are coming out in Israel. He happens to be also a Rosh Yeshiva in the Yeshiva Ramat HaSharon. And I've been learning his Sfarim for around 8 years. And what's unique about Rav Sassoon, Rav Reuven Sassoon's Torah, and the reason why I wanted to bring it to everyone and to have everyone hear a little bit what he's all about, is because he has a unique ability to discuss very deep concepts, very Kabbalistic concepts. He draws a lot from the teachings of the Arizal and the Zohar and Rav Kook, but he makes it in a very clear and understandable way that not only can you understand it, it's very inspirational, and it gives you a whole new outlook on the Parsha HaShavua. So we're going to be learning one of his approaches to the Parsha HaShavua, the Parsha that we're going into this coming Shabbos, Parsha Shlach. And Parsha Shlach, one of the major ideas about Parsha Shlach, but we'll see that all the other ideas are really connected very much so to this idea, is the story of the Meraglim. The Meraglim were spies that were sent out to see the land, see Eretz Yisrael, see Israel, to see how or if they could conquer it. And in the beginning of this parsha, it says, "Shlach lecha anashim yasur es ha'aretz." Send for yourself meraglim, spies, anashim, people. And Rashi says we're talking about very distinguished people, as the continuation of the Torah describes, that are going to go out to Eretz Canaan to see how we're going to conquer. And if you notice, the beginning of the parsha is Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe lemor. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, "Shlach lecha anashim, send for yourself men." So if you asked me, I would say that the beginning of the Torah, the beginning of the parsha, clearly implies that whose idea was it to send miraculum? Whose idea was it? It was Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe lemor. Hashem was telling Moshe to tell the people this. It was all starting from Hashem. Let's hold on to that for a second, because it really won't be so clear. But the continuation of the Torah of the Parsha is, the Meraglim have a task. They want to see the Am HaYoshev Alev, the nation that's sitting in Eretz Yisrael, HaChazak Huit HaRafe, if it's strong, if it's weak, HaMa'at Huim Rav, if it's very small, or if there's a lot of people there. So clearly, they wanted to see the nature of the land. They also wanted to see if there's trees in the land. Seems like a very normal request, a strategic desire to map out the land, to see exactly how they're going to conquer it. But if you take a step back for a second, the whole entire story makes no sense. The whole entire story makes no sense. We're going to start with a couple questions on the story that the Ramban asks. The Ramban, in this week's parasha, asks a few very strong questions. Number one is that, going back to the beginning of the story of Bnei Yisrael, Hashem tells them he's going to take them to Eretz Yisrael. This isn't a new thing. This isn't a new idea that they're just learning about for the first time. That was the story. That was the plan all along, that they're going to go and conquer Eretz Yisrael. And all the way back then, when Hashem tells them that, he says, this is, it's a very good land. It's an Eretz Zvas Chalav U'Dvash. It's an amazing land. And when Bnei Yisrael hear that, they never complain. They never say anything about it. They accept it. They hear what Hashem says, and they go on with their days. They go on with their day. They never complain. So besides the fact that they never complain until this very moment, How could they even complain? Hashem told them the land is good. Hashem told them they're going to a land that's going to be perfect for them. How do they have the chutzpah to see whether or not it's true? Is Hashem lying to them? And let's just say, for argument's sake, Hashem was lying to them and the land wasn't so good. What are they going to do about it? Are they actually going to return to Egypt, to where they were just slaves for 210 years? What does it mean they wanted to spy out the land? Hashem told them it was good. And they had no choice otherwise. It was clearly better than the alternative. And another very big question on this whole entire story is, you read the Torah, you read the text, it says the Meraglim came back from their trip in Eretz Yisrael and they said what they saw. It seems like a very objective story. Can they really be blamed for fulfilling their task? Hashem told them to send spies. And then they come back and they send spies, and lo and behold, they didn't think that they had a good chance of conquering the land. All they did was their job. How could these people be punished for doing their job? Not only that, not only were these people punished for doing their job, but the entire nation, the whole Dor HaMidbar was punished by not being able to go into Eretz Yisrael. Only their descendants were able to go. So number one, how did they not trust Hashem that this is a good land? Number two is they just were doing their job. Hashem said, send Meraglim. They went, they came back. They did their job. What's the big deal? Why is it such a punishment? Why is the whole entire generation punished for this seemingly innocent task? And not only that, let's just broaden the question for a second, and we'll really see how we don't know what's going on in this week's Parsha. Is because this is not the only time that the Torah records the story of the Meraglim. In Devarim, the first parak in Devarim, the Torah also describes the story of the Meraglim, but there are a number of differences, big differences, that make the story here almost incomprehensible. And just to go through a couple of the differences, it's glaring. Number one, as we mentioned, that at the beginning of this week's Parsha, it's clear that Hashem is the one who has the idea to send the Meraglim. It says, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe le'emor, Shlach l'cha Hashem. Hashem said to them, send people, send Meraglim to Eretz Yisrael. But if you look in Devarim, Perek Aleph, it says, V'tikrivu ne'lai kulchem. They all gathered, which is Moshe talking in Devarim, V'tikrivu ne'lai kulchem. Every one of you, B'nai Yisrael, gathered and came to me. V'tomru nishlecha anashim l'faneinu v'yachmires lonu es aretz. Let us send men to spy out the land. In the recording in Devarim, it's not Hashem's idea. The people, it comes from the people, they approach Moshe with this idea of conquering, of looking at the land to see if they'd be able to conquer it or not. And then the pasuk there goes on to say that it was a good idea in Moshe's eyes. It says, Vayitov be'enei adavar. It was good in Moshe's eyes. He agreed to their request, but it was clear that it was their request. It had nothing to do, seemingly, with Hashem. And another big difference is that not only is the idea of whose idea was it to send Meraglim different in this week's Parsha versus the Parsha in Devarim when it recounts the story of the Meraglim, but another big difference is who originally said that B'nai Yisrael shouldn't go and conquer it after the Meraglim already came back. Because in our Parsha, what happens? It seems like the nation as a whole doesn't say anything. They're fine. They never complain about going to Eretz Yisrael. It's only 10 of the 12 spies, when they come back, they're the ones that complain. And they're the ones that say, you shouldn't go up into Eretz Yisrael. But if you read the Torah, if you read the text very closely in Devarim Perek Aleph, you get a different story. There, it's not from the 10 people. The whole entire nation decides that they don't want to go up to Eretz Yisrael. So which one is it? Is it these 10 people or its entire nation? And to make it even a stronger question, what does it even mean that it's just from these 10 people as it's implied in our Parsha? Does it make sense that the whole generation would be punished for the sin of 10 people? Seemingly, the story, the recounting, makes much more sense in Devarim, where the whole entire nation didn't want to go up to Eretz Yisrael. That makes much more sense why the whole entire nation was punished, but not being able, the whole entire generation was punished, but not being able to go into Eretz Yisrael. So, again, we asked a couple of questions. Seemingly, the whole parsha of the Meraglim makes no sense. Number one, whose idea was it? Was it Hashem's or was it the people's? Number two, whose idea was it not to conquer Eretz Yisrael? Was it just these 10 people or was it the entire nation? And number three, the third question, and perhaps the most puzzling of them all, is Hashem already told them that the land is good. What are they doing doubting Hashem? What are they doing taking matters into their own hands, seemingly not trusting what Hashem said to them for so many years? Now, in order to answer these questions and get a real deep understanding of the story of the Meraglim, and a deep understanding that could really change our lives, change the way we view ourselves and view our place in Am Yisrael and Klal Yisrael, we have to go back to that question that we mentioned before. Was Hashem okay with the sending of the spies? Was Hashem okay with it? Was it just a concession? Or was it always his plan that there would be spies that would go and conquer the land? Because if you read other parts of Tanakh, you read about Yoshua, for example, everyone seems to send spies. It seems to be the normal thing to do. And it makes sense from a strategic level to send spies to map the land, see exactly how you're going to conquer it. Sending spies does not seem to be such a crazy thing, such a sin. It's normal. We see it elsewhere in Tanakh. So was Hashem okay with it? Or from the onset, did he sense that something was a little bit off here? So actually, the key to understanding this whole entire story is a medrash. The medrash gives us a mashal, gives us a parable to try to understand what's going on in the story of the Meraglim. And the story is, the mashal is, that there was once a king, and the king arranged a marriage for his son. This is back when arranging marriages were much more common. And the king described to his son that this woman who he plans to marry off his son to, is the perfect match for him. In all the qualities, she's smart, great family, all the qualities a person could look for. The king says to his son, "I found the perfect match for you." But what happens? The son says to his father, says, "You know, Dad, thank you very much. I appreciate it, but let me just go and check. Let me just go meet her a little bit, see if it's the right match for me, see if it's a good match." And the truth is he didn't have faith in his father. He was doubting whether his father picked the right person for him, and therefore the son said, "You know, let me go see what she's all about." And this seems normal in our lives to do this, obviously. But we have to remember that the king we're talking about is the king who knew everyone in the entire nation. He knew every single family, and he pinpointed the perfect match for his son. So when the king hears his son say that, he's a little bit taken aback. And he says, "You know what? Now I'm in a predicament. I can't not allow my son to go meet this woman, because then he's really going to think that I'm hiding something from him, and I don't have his best interest in mind." So the king is forced to allow his son to meet this woman to see if it's a good match. And obviously the king knows it's a good match. There's no better match in the world. However, since the king was slighted, since his son didn't trust him and didn't trust that the father would have the best interest for his son, the father punishes the son, and the father says, "You know what? You could see her. You could see her, but you're not going to marry her. She's going to be married off to one of your descendants, but not to you." And says the Medrash, this is exactly what happened to Bnei Yisrael in this week's Parsha. Hashem told them that Eretz Yisrael is the perfect land for them. It's a good land. It's a land flowing with milk and honey. But what happened? Bnei Yisrael said, thank you very much, Hashem. We don't trust you 100%, so therefore we're going to go and check out the land to see if it's right for us. And Hashem's put in a difficult situation like the king was. I can't not allow them to see the land because then they're going to think I'm hiding something. I'm not. Let me allow them to see the land, but as a punishment, I'm going to not give the land to them. I'm going to give the land to their descendants. And this mashal might seem like a very simple punishment, a very simple story of a king punishing someone for not trusting him. But as we're going to see in a second, there's much more to the story. But what we do see from this medrash is that Hashem did not want to give Meraglim. Hashem did not like the idea of sending spies to Eretz Yisrael because there is no need. Hashem pinpointed the perfect land for Bnei Yisrael. And it was only because he felt like he had to that he allowed Bnei Yisrael to send spies. And according to this medrash, we can now understand why Moshe thought it was good to send spies. From Moshe's perspective, there was nothing wrong with sending spies. After all, we see throughout Tanakh that it's very normal to send spies. It's the strategic thing to do. But the problem was that they lacked faith in Hashem. And that is what ultimately led to their downfall. But it's a lot deeper than that. It's a lot deeper than not having faith, not having trust in Hashem. Because there's a whole entire major question on this medrash that we need to ask ourselves. Is that if it's really normal to send spies, and as we see that throughout all of Tanakh, it's normal to send spies to see a land before conquering it. Then the beginning of this week's parsha, it should read very differently. After Bnei Yisrael approached Moshe to ask for spies, Hashem should have responded, fine, gather the greatest military leaders, or gather the people that are experts in mapping out land. Why did Hashem send, as we see in this week's parsha, 12 Nesiim, the leaders, the greatest leaders of the nation, one from each tribe, to map out the land? If it was purely a strategic endeavor to map out, to see how they're going to conquer Eretz Yisrael, then would have been better off to pick people that know what they're doing? It seems like the plan was doomed from the start. Sending people that don't know anything about war, about conquering land, of course they're not going to believe that they're able to do it. Why did Hashem send 12 Nesiim, 12 leaders of the tribes, the dignitaries, in order to spy out the land? Seems to me it makes no sense. And what you have to say, and this will really lead us to the answer, is that Hashem was trying to send Bnei Yisrael a message. It's true that on the outside, it looked like the Meraglim were just interested in knowing how to conquer Eretz Yisrael, knowing the best strategy. But the very fact that Hashem said to them, Shlach Lecha Anashim, which is referring to the 12 heads of the tribes, Hashem was sending them the message, I really know there's something deeper here. I really know it's not about seeing the land or not. It's not about how to conquer it or not, because then I would have sent 12 people who know how to conquer land. The fact that Hashem sent 12 Nesiim indicates that Hashem knew beneath the surface there's something deeper here. So what is it? What was beneath the surface? What did Bnei Yisrael want from spies? What did Bnei Yisrael think they couldn't do? And the answer to this question is something so fundamental to what it means to be a Jew, what it means to be part of Klal Yisrael. And that is that it's not a coincidence that those spies requested, that Bnei Yisrael requested spies right before entering Eretz Yisrael. They knew all along they were going into Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't a new idea. But right before entering, that's when they had fear. That's when they had fear. Why? Because in the desert, they had nothing to worry about. Let's think about for a second what the desert really was. A lot of times we think of the desert, the Midbar, of some wasteland with wild animals. It was scary. It was dangerous. However, if you read the Torah, we get a very different picture. The Midbar was perhaps the safest and most pleasant place in the history of the world, because we're told that Bnei Yisrael and the Midbar were witnessing miracles every single day. They had the Anani HaKavod, the pillar of fire giving them light. The cloud would pave out the roads. Their enemies would flee. They had food, more food they could even imagine, that tasted like anything they wanted. They didn't have to worry about any clothing. All their needs were taken care of. And that's why specifically upon entering Eretz Yisrael, when life is about to turn very different, when they transition to a life where they're going to have to do things on their own, where they're going to have to fight their own wars and their own battles, and plant their own crops, and worry about their parnasa, worry about how they're going to make money, that's when they started to worry. The truth is, we could compare it to a teenager going off to college. A teenager, a lot of times, when he grows up in his parents' home, everything is taken care of for him. All his needs are taken care of. He doesn't have to worry about anything. And therefore, of course, while he's in 9th, 10th, 11th grade, he's not going to think about, you know, going off to college. He's not going to look at colleges yet and start worrying about what he's going to do as a profession, because everything's taken care of. Everyone's taking care of him, for him. But once he reaches 12th grade and he starts to realize, hold on a second, I'm going to be on my own, he gets a little bit nervous. And now we can understand the story of the Meraglim. The real request of Bnei Yisrael was not to see whether the land was good or not, but the real request was that they thought Hashem wasn't able to do it. What does it mean Hashem wasn't able to do it? Of course Hashem could do it. The Medrash tells us something amazing. The Medrash says, when Bnei Yisrael, when the Meraglim come back and they say, Ki chazak hu mimenu, the land is stronger than us. Chazal say, mimenu, although the simple understanding is mimenu, that they, the other nations, are stronger than us. Chazal say, mimenu, amar Rish Lakish hitichu dvarim klapi malu, that they were talking about Hashem. They said Hashem couldn't do it. What the Torah is revealing to us here is that although Bnei Yisrael obviously thought that they couldn't conquer Eretz Yisrael, because obviously Hashem could do everything, by saying that they couldn't conquer Eretz Yisrael, it was as if they were saying Hashem couldn't conquer Eretz Yisrael. What does that mean? How do you make sense of this? The answer is we have to go back to the story of the teenage son who's going off to college. If the son is going to go to college, yes, it's very scary. It's very daunting. But if the teenager knows that the parents are coming with him, then there's nothing to worry about. And before everyone gets all nervous of a parent going with their child to college, which seems like a big nightmare, let me just elaborate what I mean by that. The truth of the matter is that normally we think of existence as us, the world, and God, Hashem. But the story of the Meraglim teaches us that there's something much deeper. It's not that Hashem lies outside of us. Hashem dwells within us. We usually think that Hashem is in Shemayim and he's orchestrating from above. But the tzaddikim tell us that ki chelek Hashem amo, Hashem lives within his nation. And we don't simply mean that Hashem dwells amongst us in a way that a king dwells with his people if he were to move his kingdom to the suburbs. because then there's still a separation between the king and the citizens. The best way to think of it is like neshama and a guf, a soul and a body. A body without a soul isn't really considered a person. And so too, B'nai Yisrael, as a whole, aren't really considered people, aren't considered a nation, if not for the fact that Hashem dwells amongst us. The Pasuk says, U'ledavcha bo ki hu chayecha. Cleave to Hashem because He is your life. It's not just that He is your life, that everything around or everything our life should revolve around Hashem. But just as our blood is our lives, so too Hashem is our lives. He lives within us. That seems a little bit unclear. I'll clarify what I mean in a second. But this is what it means when Chazal say that Hashem is called the Libon Shel Yisrael, the heart of Israel. It's not just that Hashem cares about everything that happens. The common understanding of Mashkacha Pratis is that Hashem is above, but He's looking down in this world, looking at all the details, and cares about every small thing that happens. That's not it. That's not enough. That's a simple understanding of Mashkacha Pratis. But the deeper understanding of Hashkacha Pratis, the deeper understanding of what it means to be a Jew, is that Hashem is not just looking down and caring and orchestrating what's happening. But Hashem is us. Hashem is within us. It's a radical thing to say. And I wouldn't be able to say it if the Mekubalim and the Tzaddikim hadn't said it before us. But Hashem dwells amongst us. And not only does this give us strength to act in this world, when we know that Hashem is within us, that all of our actions are really a representation of Hashem, but it gives Hashem strength as well, kiviyachol, the tzaddikim say. The best way to think of it is like a coal. A coal always has a flame within it. It never gets extinguished. Sometimes, though, the fire gets bigger. If you fan the flame, the fire could get bigger and you can notice it. But sometimes the fire is hidden within the piece of coal and you can't see the fire. You can't see the flame. And the same is true with us. Hashem dwells amongst us, within our neshamas. Just sometimes, according to our actions, determines how obvious that is. If we do the right thing and if we become the right people, then Hashem's presence is obviously felt. It's a radical concept to say, but in Kabbalah, we call this concept the Shechina. The Shechina is the aspect of Hashem that dwells within us and actually has an effect on what happens on this world. You might have heard in Kabbalah there's two terms that are normally used, Kudsha Brichu u'Shechintei. Kudsha Brichu means the part of Hashem that is, as I would say, the normal way or the typical way of understanding Hashem. That Hashem is above, and even if you want to say He's involved in this world, that's from a distance. But Shechinte means that Hashem not only dwells amongst us, but is manifested by our actions. And the reason why Hashem did it this way is Hashem wanted us to be partners with Him in creation. He doesn't just want to look from above and to see what happens and even orchestrate what happens. But He wants to be a partner with us on this world, to partner in the creation and the perfection of the world. And that's why the concept that we're talking about, called the Shechina, is referred to as the moon, because the moon waxes and wanes to represent the fact that the Shechina, in accordance to our actions, is felt and manifests itself in this world. And that's exactly why the Dor HaMidbar, as opposed to the Dor that was going into Eretz Yisrael, the Dor HaMidbar was referred to as the generation of the sun, the Zohar says. Because the sun is shining 100% of the time. It never waxes and wanes. And that represents the Dor HaMidbar. Everything was taken care of Hashem. Hashem's presence was felt at a constant, no matter what happened. Whereas the generation entering Eretz Yisrael, the Zohar says, is compared to the moon. Because that is the generation in which the Shechina was present. In which we could sense Hashem's presence in our lives in accordance to what we do. And all Jewish history is really one journey to actualize the Shechina, to live fully amongst us. When we left Mitzrayim, it wasn't just a freeing of the Jewish body, but it was the birth of the realization that Hashem dwells amongst us. just as a baby needs time to fully form, the Dor HaMidbar was this kind of childhood for us, where we were just learning to grow up. We were just trying to make sense of things. But the Dor that was entering Eretz Yisrael is like the teenager entering, going into his college years, where now things are going to be on his own. But on the other hand, it's the first time in his life where he could really say that what I learned from my parents, all the messages and all the lessons that I learned from my parents, I could actually bring out into the world in a real way, make a difference. Up until now, I didn't have that ability because I lived in the shadow of my parents. Everything I did was from them and because of them. But once you're going into Eretz Yisrael, once the teenager is going off to college, they may look like they're on their own, but they're really expressing what they already have. So what was the mistake? The mistake of the Meraglim was that the teenager thinks that he's all alone without his parents. But the truth is, as we've seen, that Hashem was not sending us away. He was just trying to help us reach our full maturity. Full maturity is only when we're no longer in the shadow of our parents. Rav Kook says that, we mentioned this in the Religious Zionism series, Rav Kook says that the redemption from Egypt was full of miracles, whereas the redemption, the final redemption, was done in a natural way. And the reason is, because when we left Mitzrayim, we were still immature. We needed the miracles to sense Hashem in our lives. We needed to see that Hashem was constantly there. But going into Eretz Yisrael for the final redemption and going to Yisrael for the Bnei Yisrael at this point was a sign of maturity, where they no longer needed the miracles, where they could sense Hashem's presence even without the miracles. So when when Bnei Yisrael asked for spies, Hashem wanted to test them on this one thing. They wanted to test them not, you know, whether they could conquer the lands or not. Obviously, Hashem knew. Meraglim knew that Hashem could conquer the land. But the test was to see whether Bnei Yisrael internalized the message that Hashem dwells amongst them. Because when Hashem dwells amongst them, when Hashem dwells amongst you, then you could conquer anything. You could do anything. And the Meraglim failed at that test. They viewed themselves as inadequate. They said that they're like grasshoppers in the eyes of the nations of Eretz Yisrael. Because yes, they knew that Hashem could conquer Eretz Yisrael, but they thought that they're going off to college and the parents are staying back. They didn't realize that it was a transition of the spiritual makeup of Klal Yisrael. It was a transition from going to a stage where Hashem is so obviously seen and felt, to a stage where he's there, just in a different way, where he's manifested itself through our actions and not through miracles. And that's what the Chazal mean when they say that when we said Hashem ki chazak hu mimenu, it was too strong for us. Chazal say it was too strong for Hashem. Because when you deny that you could do something, when you think that you will fail at something, you're basically saying, well, I'm on my own. But if a person really knew that Hashem dwelled amongst them, and Hashem lived within your actions, then a person would never lose faith. A person would always have the inspiration to do whatever he sets his mind out to do. And just to understand this, I'd like to say a story that I heard one time. You know, there was once a boy with his father, and he said to his father, "Dad, how big is God? How big is God?" And the father chuckled to himself and he said, "You know, this is a good opportunity to teach my son something." And the father, he saw an airplane in the sky. And he pointed to the airplane and he said to his son, "How big is the airplane?" And the boy responded, "It's small, Dad. I can hardly see it." And the father then took his son to the airport. And they stood next to a plane, and the father said to his son, how big is it? And the son said, wow, it's huge now. And the father said to his son, that's what it is with Hashem. That's what it is with God. How big God is depends on your distance between you and Him. If you're close to Him, He will seem big to you. If you're far from Him, He will seem very distant. And the truth is, that story has Christian... I got it from a Christian source. I heard it from a rabbi, but the rabbi got it from a Christian source. And the truth is that there's a Jewish ending to this story. The Christian version of the story ends there. But the Jewish version of this story ends like this. That there was an elderly man overhearing this whole conversation between the father and the son. And the elderly man said, you're both wrong. You're both wrong. You don't understand, but we are actually in the airplane. And what did he mean? What did the elderly man mean? He meant exactly what we're talking about right now. Hashem is the Libon Shel Yisrael, the heart of Israel. And that means that we live amongst Him. And He lives amongst us. And everything we do is within the airplane. Everything we do is a manifestation of Hashem. With an understanding, we can understand now the whole continuation of the story of the Meraglim that seemingly makes no sense. Because after the story of the Meraglim, we have the story of the Ma'afilim. The Ma'afilim were, if you think about it, polar opposites of the Meraglim. The Meraglim were people who were told to enter Eretz Yisrael and refused to do so. The Ma'afilim were people who, after Hashem told that no one's allowed to go to Eretz Yisrael, they said, no, thank you very much, Hashem. We're going into Eretz Yisrael. They tried entering Eretz Yisrael, but they were killed by the enemy nations. What does this story have to do with anything? So most people understand this story just to be another story of the story of Bnei Yisrael in the desert. But Rav Sison says, no, it's very, very, it's very connected. Because there's really two sides of the same coin. The question is, how do you understand Hashem in your life? If you view Hashem as distant, as far, far from you, and not living within your actions, then there's two consequences that could happen. Either you'll think that you're on your own and you won't be successful, and that's what the Meraglim felt. They said, we're on our own, Hashem is leaving us, and therefore we won't be able to conquer Eretz Yisrael. Or you might think that you're on your own, and therefore we don't need to listen to Hashem. We could do whatever we want, and that's what the Ma'afilim felt. We don't need Hashem, even though Hashem said not to do it. We don't need Him. And unfortunately, we see that too often in modern history, where a lot of the miraculous victories in Israel in the last 70 years, let's say, miraculous victories, and too many times we hear people say it was because of our military expertise. It was because we know how to conquer, we're better, we have better weapons. But the truth is, that's wrong. This week's parasha tells us that Hashem dwells amongst us, and the victory that we had in Israel in the last 70 years was really Hashem, us acting with Hashem by our sides. And we could also understand why after all this, after the story of the Meraglim, and after the story of the Ma'afilim, a very peculiar mitzvah is taught in this week's parasha, and that is the mitzvah of Hafrashas Challah, separating challah. And the mitzvah of Hafrashas Challah is very different than other mitzvahs that are seemingly similar to it, because when it comes to Trumos and Maisros, there's a mitzvah that a person has to give up a portion of their raw produce. But when it comes to challah, the mitzvah is specifically when it's not raw anymore, specifically when you take the wheat and make it into dough. And not only that, the mitzvah of challah, Hafrashas Challah, only applies to dough that's going to be made into food, not to anything else. And the reason behind all this is because it's a perfect continuation of this story. Because there is no greater thing in the world that represents our relationship with Hashem, our partnership with Hashem, than challah, than bread. If you think about it, Hashem created stalks of wheat. But it's only edible and only obligated in a bracha once man interacts with the wheat and makes it into an edible bread. As opposed to the mun, where in the desert everything was taken care of from Hashem. Bread is specifically the food which requires the most human effort, the most human partnership in order to create. That's why we make the bracha on bread, Hamotzi Lecha Min Haaretz. We acknowledge, despite all of our efforts, despite all of our involvement, that we didn't do it ourselves. Hamotzi Bracha to Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz. We bless Hashem who takes the food out of the ground, who takes the bread out of the ground. Because the test is that, do you recognize that you are a partner with Hashem or not? Do you think that Hashem is still in Shemayim and not part of your day-to-day life, not living amongst you and acting through your act and present through your actions? Or do you recognize that you and Him together are a motzi lechem in aretz, to take out bread and to perfect this world? So just to summarize what we've seen, we asked about the Meraglim. And seemingly the story makes no sense. Is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea? How could the Meraglim even question whether the land is good or not? Didn't Hashem tell them that the land's going to be good? We also talked about, did it come from the nation or did it come from just these 10 people? And according to everything we're saying is that really the Meraglim wasn't a good idea. But the sin of Bnei Yisrael was not that they thought Hashem couldn't do it. The sin was that they thought that because Hashem is not going to be present in their lives in the same obvious way that He's been up until now, that means Hashem is abandoning them. They should have realized that Hashem is living through their actions and His presence is felt through the Shekhinah in a different way. And the same is true with all of our lives as well. A lot of times we think we can't sense Hashem. We don't know if He's there. But the truth is, the reason why we don't always feel Hashem's presence is because He wants His presence to be manifested through our actions. He wants to partner up with us in the perfection of the world. So I wish everyone an amazing Shabbos, and I appreciate everyone for coming, and hope to see everyone back in shul very soon. Thank you.